Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette.
Welcome to episode 133 of the Gunblog Variety Cast, a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. How are you doing, Aaron?
I am feeling so much better after this weekend.
Wow, what happened to you?
Well, first of all, I went to Mag 40. Which was a blast, and I'll talk about that later. But if you'd been following my Facebook page, you would know that I developed a really bad sickness on Friday during the Mag 40 course. So here's what's going on. It's Saturday. We've pretty much gone through all the classroom and all the training. We've just got to shoot the qualification course and take the test. And I thought I was just nervous because I have this ability to psych myself out. And we get out there and my stomach is churning and I'm a little bit shaky and I'm just thinking I'm psyching myself out. So I start telling myself that I just got my supercharge, because that's one of the things they tell you at Mag 40, that the butterflies in your stomach, it just means your adrenaline is pumping and your senses are sharper and you don't feel pain. I was feeling pain, but, you know, you got all these things. And so, you know, don't fear the nerves. Just say that's your supercharge. So I'm sitting there going, I just got my supercharge, do-da, do-da. You know, I'm trying to unpsych myself. And I'm getting ready, and the instructors are shooting their part of the course because it's called the pace setter. They go through it so that you know exactly how long you have to do your own version of it. And they're shooting. And I threw up. I threw up about three times. I didn't make a big deal about it. I didn't want anyone to see me because I was embarrassed. I just thought I'm making myself sick. So I just go to the back and I puke. I'm really not feeling my best. It's hot and I'm susceptible to heat exhaustion. So I'm thinking, okay, in addition to psyching myself out so much that I puke, I've got heat exhaustion. I need to drink more. This is just going to be a bad day. And I ended up shooting a 252 out of 300. Now, in order to pass, I only had to shoot a 225. So I passed. That's good. But I'm just thinking 252, oh man, because I made a lot of mistakes. My shots were drifting to the left. I took way too much time at the beginning, and I literally did not have time to take three shots, so I had to make those back up at the end at the furthest distance, and I'm kicking myself because, you know, I'm a perfectionist. I got to do it right, and it preys on my mind and things like that. And so we get done, and then I got to go and puke some more. And that's when people start to notice, and they're going, Aaron, are you feeling okay? Because you seem pale and not really steady on your feet, and I'm just playing it off. It's like, no, it's just I nerves and too much heat and things like that. And so we finish up with the shooting. We pack up all our stuff. We head back to the classroom to take the written part of the exam because it's now, I don't know, 5 o'clock in the evening. And so we can take the course when it's not natural light outside. And we get there and we're starting to review our notes and I'm still not feeling great. And then I just make a mad dash to the kitchen and find the biggest trash can I find and proceed to puke my toenails out.
Ugh.
And, you know, this is done in front of the class, which embarrasses me. And, you know, the class EMT comes over and starts taking my pulse and doing things like that. And they're saying things like, yeah, you're tachycardic. You're obviously not feeling real well. And each time they try to get me to drink more water, I can only drink a little bit and I puke it back up again. I can only hold like about a mouthful or so. And the EMT, and there's a doctor in the class as well. And they're looking at me and they're saying, you really ought to go to the emergency room. And I'm going, man, I would love to, but I can't afford it. Trust me, Sean, I would have gone to the ER if I could have afforded it. You know, hook me up with an IV to keep me from being dehydrated, get me the anti-nausea, and oh, the diarrhea started. So, you know, all that would have been great, but I couldn't afford the bill, so I just decided to tough it out. And so I ended up actually not taking the written test. I've got to make it up later. But, you know, I had a really good excuse. I was sick as a dog. I was sleeping it off in one of the nearby classrooms. Towards the end of the evening, everyone has finished taking their courses, and my buddy, you know, packs me up and heads me off to the hotel. And I spend the most miserable night. I am going at both ends. My mouth is just this wad of cotton. I'm desperately dehydrated, but if I take more than about a mouthful, I puke it back up again. At one point, I actually got that, you know, marvelous achievement unlocked of I'm sitting on the toilet, I'm doing my business, and I puke into the bathtub. It was completely disgusting.
I have done exactly that. I have done that. I had food poisoning. I ended up going to the ER that day. Yeah, it ain't pleasant.
Yeah, it was just, it was so, the devastation that I left, I felt so bad that afterwards, first of all, I left a tip for the maid, and then I went down to the front desk and I said, I am so sorry. I was sick the entire night. I don't know if I had a virus or food poisoning or what, but it's bad in there. It's bad. If you send a maid in there, send her in with the rubber gloves and the face mask. I don't know what else in there is contagious, but it's bad. And I am so, so sorry. I was mortified by this. So later on, I found out that I wasn't the only one who got sick. There were about 3-4 other people in our class who also got sick. And one of them actually did go to the emergency room. She's probably out by now, but last I heard, she was staying in Live Oak like a couple of days recovering, and Gail was bringing her food and things like that. And so, in retrospect, shooting 252, shooting 84% while becoming sick as a dog is suddenly not that bad.
Well, it's all how you look at it, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, I just figure if I can shoot a 252 while I'm coming down, I think it was the norovirus. So if I can shoot 85% while coming down with this horrible sickness, man, imagine what I can do if I'm feeling great.
Well, here you go.
So yeah, that was my weekend. How was yours, Sean?
Well, you know, by comparison, I'm pretty clean. I'm back to dry firing. Well, I didn't really stop, but I'm still dry firing. Actually, I went out dry firing this morning, and after we're done recording, I'm going to dry fire some more. I'm trying to get twice a day in, 5 days a week, and I'm doing really, really short, like 5-minute, 10-minute sessions, because you just can't keep concentration longer than that. I see these people that want to do 2 hours, you know, once a week, forget it, you know, give me a little bit every day. Well, I also picked up my first piece of total gamer gear. I got myself an IDPA vest on eBay, so I'm learning how to use that. And it's harder than you'd think. I've been drawing from under a polo shirt for so long that I don't know what to do with my offhand anymore. I would always reach across, pull up my shirt, and then go for the gun with my strong hand. Well, what do I do with my hand? What do I do with that hand? What's it going to do? So I'm supposed to put it on my chest. I know that, but that's not where it wants to go. I go to draw, and it's reaching for who knows where. And ends up halfway between the two. So I'm trying to retrain myself to, okay, what am I wearing? Okay, this is how we're going to do it. I'm set for a polo shirt draw, but this whole having a jacket thing, I don't know what to do with it. So I'm working on it. I've had the thing for all of a day now, so I guess by the end of the week, I'll be okay. I'm looking forward to next weekend. I'm going to go out to another IDPA shoot, and that should be fun. Given that the last one was so much fun, get to shoot out of cars. Man, I'm looking forward to it. So we'll see what happens next week. But in the meantime, I'm going to do my dry firing.
Well, all right. Thanks to Lucky Gunner and Remington for their support of the Gunblog Variety Cast. From Golden Saber to Range Rounds, get a full lineup of quality Remington ammo that ships fast at LuckyGunner.com. And I want to give a personal special shout-out to my friend Anthony Welsh of Lucky Gunner, a.k.a. my ammo pimp. And he hooked me up with the 9mm ammunition I needed to attend Mag 40 this weekend. So, thanks, Anthony.
So how did that Remington ammunition that he sent you work for you?
It worked flawlessly.
Flawlessly. All right, there you go. So check out LuckyGunner.com and see what they've got for Remington ammo.
Beth is on assignment and will return next week.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to GunblogVarietyCast.com and click on the donate or the subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly, and a little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. Man sought in face stabbing.
Dun dun dun.
The Halifax County Sheriff's Office is on the hunt for a Roanoke Rapids man who they suspect of a face stabbing. The suspect, 20-year-old suspect, allegedly stabbed a homeowner this morning. The two were acquaintances. The incident occurred in the Bullington Road area of Roanoke Rapids. The victim went to an undisclosed medical facility and is now in stable condition. Suspect faces charges of assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, inflicting serious injury. No motive was available as of press time. Those with information are asked to call the Sheriff's Office or Halifax County Crime Stoppers.
I like how they specifically quantify it as a face stabbing. I mean, you know, a stabbing is bad enough, but this was a face stabbing.
Yeah. And of course, they are acquaintances.
Yeah.
They don't give a name on the victim, but they did give a name on the suspect. So guess what kind of guy this guy is?
I don't know, but I have to wonder if they dated. Just because, I don't know if the victim is female, and you may not know either.
No.
But I was just thinking, you know, if you're going to stab someone in the face, you're going to disfigure. And I could just totally see a disgruntled ex going, you're not going to be pretty anymore. Stab,
ew,
stab, stab.
Yeah, you're right. Now that I think about it, that does sound just disturbingly plausible, Aaron. Thank you for that thought. Ugh.
So tell us about our choir boy.
Well, suspect, 12 counts, breaking and entering vehicles, felon class I, larceny, felon class H, receiving, possessing stolen firearm, felon class H, and common law robbery, felon class G.
Graduated to violent crime.
Nope, common law robbery is violent crime.
Of course it is. See, yeah, I keep confusing robbery with burglary with theft, but yeah, robbery is that whole give me money or I'm going to hurt you. So you are right.
Yep. It's interesting that we don't actually have a law in North Carolina that says you may not rob from people. It's just a common law offense. Everybody knows it's wrong. We don't have to write it down. So yeah, it's a common law offense. Baron is on assignment and will return soon.
Hey, it's Tony Ray of the Liberty on Point podcast. Here to remind you that this show is part of Self Defense Radio Network. You can check out this show and all the other great podcasts over at selfdefenseradio.net.
The main topic segment. So I understand that in and amongst all of the trips to the bathroom, you attended a Mag 40 class this weekend. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? What'd you do? How was it? Was it worth the time and effort of going to it? Should any of our listeners take the Mag 40 class?
Yes, I did indeed go. I had a great time. So for people who don't know, or are at least curious why it's called that, it's called Mag 40 because it is actually 40 hours of instruction. In my case, it was four 10-hour days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The way it works is you get there in the morning. We started at 8 o'clock. And from morning till lunchtime, we watch videos of Moss's lecture, and there's a reason for this. It's not that he's cheaping out. He recorded these back in 2013, so this ensures that no matter what kind of a day he's having, you're going to get the same good instruction. And also, in case there's ever a question as to what you were taught, like in a court of law, he can show the jury the actual video that you were shown.
I was just thinking that if he's got it on video and you watch the video and they have documentation that you watch the video, then pretty much any jury that has to convict you, if they're going to, they have to know everything you know. So they have to watch the video.
Yeah, and the video can be entered into evidence. Yeah, Moss is a genius at this sort of thing. Moss would introduce the video, we'd watch it, then he'd answer questions. He'd probably give us an anecdote or a funny story or two. Moss is hilarious. I can't tell most of his jokes because they're filthy in that, you know, military policeman way. But they aren't exactly, you know, mean. They're just sort of coarse and dirty. But yeah, I mean, unless you're like really sensitive, you won't be offended. I mean, there's nothing racial there at all. Well, He says one thing, because Moss is of Arabic descent, and he refers to himself as an Arab, and he does it in this genuinely self-effacing way that is just hilarious.
Well, it may have made a big deal, you know, back in the 70s that he's of Lebanese Christian descent. Of course, apparently his family's been in the United States longer than anybody in my family, so there's that.
Yeah, he's third generation American. He's more American than a lot of people, and he is... he's basically aging on the Jack Palance schedule, where he's just slow. He doesn't really seem to be getting older. He's just kind of shrinking into leather. I mean, the man is 70, folks. You see him while you still can, but I digress. I'm digressing all over the place. So, you know, you watch a series of videos, you take copious notes, you ask questions, you get them answered, you get a working lunch, and then you head off to the shooting range. That's basically it for 4 days. You watch videos in the morning, and then you shoot in the afternoon. Saturday is when you take the test. You get your last minute stuff you hadn't reviewed before, stuff in the morning. You go, you shoot your qualification in the afternoon, and then the evening when the light is fading, you take your test. And that's basically it. And you don't have a whole lot of time to do much else because it's so much is thrown at you, so much to absorb. It was a lot. It was really busy. But I learned so much. The best way I can describe this is that it's like going to a country club where you consult with the golf pro or the tennis pro on how to improve your game. Only it's the gun pro, Masad Ayoub, who's teaching you how to improve your shooting, not only for your own personal improvement and, you know, pleasure at shooting, but also for self-defense.
So tell us about this course of fire. You know, I always hear about, well, you got to shoot 300 to match Masad because, of course, he's going to shoot 300. What is this course of fire? Is it, you know, is it very complicated or is it funny targets? How's it work?
No, we're using the cardboard colored, I think they're IDPA targets.
They have a circle in the heart and probably nothing in the head. It just had a square head.
No, these are the different. These are the ones that look like they kind of got the sheet of paper in the middle, and then there's a little box in the head.
Okay, and the sheet of paper in the middle is actually like kind of narrow and kind of tall?
Yes.
And it has a little credit card shape of where the eyes would be?
Yes, precisely. Yes.
Yeah, USPSA.
That's what we're shooting. So we ended up shooting about 500 or so rounds total with all the various practice. But here's what the five-stage course of fire was. At 4 yards, we had to shoot 6 rounds that, you know, just put them in one magazine, or if you've got a revolver, you shoot your cylinder. You shoot that with your weak hand, and you have 8 seconds to do that.
Okay, so that's not a real tight time amount.
It's not a tight time amount, but I actually screwed up there because when I hear that whistle, the little evil lizard in the back of my head goes, shoot, 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 now. And I knew that was going to happen, and so I just decided to take my time.
Oh, no.
Breathe.
You overcompensated?
I overcompensated. I only shot 3.
Oh, no. And see, like 99% of everybody out there is going to blaze away as fast as they can.
Yeah.
So you're like one in a million, Aaron.
And it was the first stage, and of course, I'm kicking myself, and I got a chance to make those 3 shots up, but any shots you don't make, you make them up at the 15-yard line where it's harder. Yay.
No.
So stage 2 is almost like stage 1. It's just that you're shooting with your dominant hand, but it's still one hand only, 6 rounds, 8 seconds, 4 yards. All right, then you back up to the 7-yard line and you do the FBI drill where you assume your best stance. It's either Weaver, Chapman, or Isosceles, and you shoot 12 rounds. So, you know, you shoot through a magazine, you quickly swap out your magazine, shoot 6 more.
Okay, is there a time length on that?
There is, and for the life of me, I don't remember what it is. So the next stage is at 10 yards. You shoot 6 rounds in the cover crouch, which is where you basically squat like you're going to take a poop. And then you do the high kneel, which is the will you marry me pose, only, you know, a bit stiffer. And then the low kneel, which is where you get down on both knees if you can do so, and you sit on your heels, and you've got 75 seconds to
so
shoot
all day
those.
And all night. That's 6 rounds per each, right?
Yes, yes. You have 75 seconds to shoot 18 rounds.
So you have 25 seconds per position.
Yeah.
6 rounds. Yeah, you should be able to do that.
And then the last stage is at 15 yards. This is part of the FBI practical police course where you shoot 6 shots Weaver, 6 shots Chapman, and 6 shots Isosceles in 90 seconds.
That seems like a lot of time, Aaron.
Oh my God, it's a lot of time. Well, this is also where if you've missed any of the shots, like you didn't shoot 3 of them at the first stage, like I did, that's where you load them into your magazine and you make it up. But just to make it clear how much time people had, I mentioned that the staff ran a pace setter course before we ran the qualification. And when we got to the stage, Moss stopped halfway through, picked up his can of iced tea, took a sip or two, put his cup down, and proceeded to finish the course of fire and still had enough time, you know, to just to admire the target before the whistle blew.
Oh,
and
man.
And I bring this up for 2 reasons. First of all, that's just completely in his sense of humor. I'm a badass. I will sip my tea while shooting. But also, he said he deliberately did that to demonstrate there is no hurry here. But of course, you know, I hear that whistle and go, 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 go.
You don't want to be late. Don't want to have to make up shots.
No, definitely not. So, yeah, it was just a lot of fun. I learned a lot. And I think that anyone who carries concealed really must go. I think that they have a responsibility to themselves to take it. And if you just enjoy shooting pistol, then you want to go.
So give me some reasons why I should go to Mag 40, Aaron. Convince me.
All right. Well, first of all, you learn from experts, and I think we all know that Masoud Ayoub is an expert at defensive shooting. After all, he's been teaching defensive pistol use to police since, what, the 1970s? He's a champion shooter. He's written several books on the subject. You know, the guy might maybe know his stuff.
Right, but, you know, he's just one guy.
Well, yeah, but he's not the only guy who teaches it. He's got staff there. And he's very, very picky about who he lets teach his class. All of the instructors at my class were, at the very least, graduates of his advanced MAG 80 class. And some of them are just highly skilled in their own right, as in actual competitive shooters. For example, one of our instructors, and of course, range safety officers, was Dave Blazek, who is the current, I think it's IDPA national champion. You don't have people who are just watching you for safety infractions. You will have people who will watch you shoot and say, hey, you know, you're doing this thing. Maybe if you did it this other way, you'll be able to shoot a lot better. One of the things they did in order to combat trigger slap was, all right, so I held the gun, loaded it, aimed it, but I was to keep my finger limp. The instructor would come up, put his finger on top of mine, and he controlled the shots. And the idea was, you know, if you've never properly pulled a trigger, you may not know how to do it. And you can't really explain it to someone. So instead, you make them feel it. And so I actually saw this happen. There was this one lady next to me who I don't know exactly what her problem was. I'm not qualified to judge, but she was all over the place. And then when the trigger drill happened, all she had to do was keep the gun aimed. She was getting groups, and I'm not exaggerating, about the size of a quarter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that level of hands-on training that I haven't seen anywhere else. Not saying they don't have it because I'm not really experienced in all the different courses, but I've never seen this before. I thought that was awesome. And so you get this intense hands-on training. Secondly, You learn a lot. I'm going to get very nerdy here, big surprise, but being in the course felt like I was pumping experience points into my firearm skill. I was like, level up. I just was taught all sorts of things, such as how best to hold the gun, how to quickly acquire a sight picture, how best to handle the recoil. I got a lot of good advice from a lady, and I've forgotten her name. Her name is Jody. She's another competitor, and she has small hobbit hands like I do, and she saw that I was having trouble doing the magazine release, and so she called me over and said, hey, maybe you should do it this way. And it wasn't part of the official Mag 40 training. It was just, hi, I shoot a Glock and have small hands too. This worked for me. Maybe it'll work for you too. And I go, oh, I understand. And so, yeah, it's just that meeting with professionals who are happy, eager even, to share what they know with you. And it definitely improved my shooting ability. You also get mass in your corner in court if you ever have to shoot in self-defense. So not only will the classroom portion of the class teach you the ins and outs of when to shoot and when not to shoot, if you follow his rules, and of course you've passed the test, and you have to shoot someone in self-defense and you end up getting prosecuted anyway, maybe by an overzealous district attorney who hates guns and wants to make a statement, mass will come to your trial. Not only as an expert witness regarding firearms and defensive shooting, but he'll also serve as a material witness in your defense, stating that his course taught you what to recognize in an assailant and what to do when certain things happened. And that goes back to the whole showing the jury what he showed you. Furthermore, attending the course proves that you are a responsible citizen who takes the duties of concealed carry seriously, such that you are willing to sacrifice 40 hours of classroom time in order to improve your skill. So you don't just come across as some Rambo wannabe or some easily panicked person who thinks that just keeping a gun on your person will serve as a magical talisman. You're actually going, no, I am committed to being a responsible carrier, and I'm going to spend time and energy and money and effort in order to become good at this. And finally, Maz is just really fun to be around. I said before, he's got this hilarious but inappropriate sense of humor.
My wife has seen him on video and laughed herself sick. And she's not really, I mean, like, not into guns. And Moss telling, you know, I swear this video has to be like 30 years old. He was doing instruction for police officers. And she laughed and laughed and laughed. Like, to the point where she's like, can you take that class without taking the shooting part? Yes, you can.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just, if you hang out with him, you will come back with all sorts of great experiences and stories. Oh, he's also got something called the Rolling Rock Rule. If you want his opinions on debatable subjects like 9mm versus 45, his rule is that this requires a minimum of a six-pack of Rolling Rock. And if you buy him that six-pack, he will be happy to talk to you about these things while he drinks. And my plan was, I was going to get him a six-pack and set up the audio recording gear and ask him something and just record. But stupid, stupid norovirus got me sick.
Well, that's all well and good, Aaron, but $800 is a lot of money for a class.
Yeah, I agree. It is a lot of money. It was the biggest hurdle for me. But you know what costs a lot more than $800? Attorney fees and trial costs if you're ever prosecuted for murder after defensive shooting. So for $800, not only do you get an amazing experience, a clinic on how to shoot, classroom hours on just the fine points of defensive law and how to protect yourself, but you also get a very cheap form of insurance that you don't have to keep paying insurance premiums on.
All right. Okay, great. But 40 hours? Wow. You know, where am I going to find 40 hours in my life?
Well, 40 hours is a drop in the bucket compared to how long a trial will last, or, heaven help you, a sentence for murder or manslaughter. But if you cannot afford the time commitment for four 10-hour days, that's okay. The Masada Youth Group actually splits the classroom and range portion into two different classes, called Mag 20 Classroom and Mag 20 Live Fire. And both of them add up, both cost-wise and hour-wise, to a single Mag 40 class. So, in your case, just take 2 days off twice rather than 4 days all at once. Or, like your wife wanted to do, just take the classroom portion and that's it.
All right. Okay, now you took it in Live Oak, Florida. That's a long ways from here, Aaron. I mean, you could drive there. I can't drive to Live Oak.
Okay, that's true, but here's the good news. The classes aren't just in Live Oak, Florida. They are, in fact, all over the country, taught by authorized Masada U Group instructors. There's a Mag 40 class on March 30th in San Antonio, classes in Ohio and Kansas in May, a class in Lincoln, Nebraska in June. You get the idea. And the same goes for both kinds of Mag 20 courses as well. Just check the class schedule on the Masada U Group webpage, and you can just see if there's one near you.
All right. Sounds pretty good. As we were promised last week, it's still movie week. This week, Tiffany reviews I Am Not Your Negro.
You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view. Till you climb inside of his skin, walk around in it.
Hey guys, it's Tiffany here, and as promised last week, I am returning this week with yet another movie review. Last week was John Wick 2, and this week it is the documentary I Am Not Your Negro. It's a documentary that features only the last pages of writing done by James Baldwin before he passed away. I should warn you that there is some abrasive language. It uses the N-word several times, but I've bleeped it out. So just know that that's coming, okay? But here's the clip.
If any white man in the world says, give me liberty or give me death, the entire white world applauds. When a black man says exactly the same thing, he is judged a criminal and treated like one, and everything possible is done to make an example of this bad nigger so there won't be any more like him.
The story of the Negro in America is the story of America. It's not a pretty story.
I'm a black man in a white world.
Most of the white Americans I've ever encountered surely have nothing whatever against Negroes. That's really not the question. Really a kind of apathy and ignorance. You don't know what's happening on the other side of the wall because you don't want to know.
There are days when you wonder what your role is in this country and what your future is in it. I can't be a pessimist because I'm alive. The question you've got to ask yourself, the white population of this country has got to ask itself, is why it was necessary to have a nigger in the first place. Because I'm not a nigger. I'm a man. But if you think I'm a nigger, it means you need it. And you got to find out why. And the future of the country depends on that.
Okay, so let's tease this out a little bit and settle in for some real talk here. So if you're white, I get that you might be thinking, gosh, you know, another movie about black struggles, black this and black that, blah, blah, blah. And you might be thinking, yes, the 60s were terrible and Jim Crow was terrible and nobody denies that. I've never denied that. So do we really have to keep dwelling on it? I didn't approve of it then. I don't approve of it now. I don't live my life that way. I'm not a racist. So I really don't need to be reminded 58 times a day of how racist America was 50 years ago. Can we please move on? I hear that argument a lot, not just from white people, also from some black people, by the way. And I get it. On the surface, that's a tantalizing argument. Here's the problem with that, though. A few episodes ago, I spent a few minutes trying my best, unsuccessfully, to put into words how much I hate the N-word. And I got several emails in response to that. I got some private messages on Facebook and things like that. And most were positive. It was good feedback. But there were a few people thanking me for explaining that because they had never thought about it before. And it never occurred to them just what kind of effect the N-word actually has on some black people. Now, I said it then and I'll say it again now. I know a lot of black folks, especially young black folks, use that term almost as a term of endearment, especially in entertainment. And I abhor that phenomenon. I want to be crystal clear. I hate the word regardless of who utters it. But here's my point. The fact that there are people in 2017 who were taken aback when I so vehemently, so viscerally anathematized that word is empirical evidence that we still need movies like I Am Not Your Negro. It's empirical proof that the issue is not yet resolved. It's not, we haven't reached a point where everybody understands there's a 100% consensus about what that dark chapter in America's history actually means and what its relevance is still even today. Now, this is also relevant to guns and the so-called gun debate and the current troubles experienced between Black communities and the police. For many people, especially those who went through this period firsthand, like my mother, guns were bad precisely because of the police, right? Guns were loathed because they were tools by which the police enforced segregation, enforced Jim Crow. And, you know, my mother tells a story. Some of you, if you listen to the past episodes, you have met my mother. She's appeared on my segment before. Hi, Mom. I'm sure she's listening. But she tells a story of when she was a young woman, 18 or 19, something like that, and what happened to her and her best friend at the time on the night that Martin Luther King was assassinated. Now, keep in mind, we live in Memphis, Tennessee, so he was killed just minutes from my mother's house. And there was a strict curfew to avoid riots, which, of course, were unavoidable. But my mom and her best friend needed to be out because her best friend's mother had been hospitalized. So her best friend was going to the hospital, and my mom said, you know what, I'll go with you. And they were in a car, and they were driving, and they came to an intersection where the police were enforcing the curfew. And my mom says that a line of police officers, several of them, walked out into the street in front of her car, formed a line like a barrier. She says that all of them had long guns, and you know, she doesn't know exactly what kind. I think based on her description, they were probably shotguns. She said that they all raised the muzzles in her direction, pointed their guns at the car that she and her best friend were in. They screech on brakes in front of these police officers, and they're staring down the barrels of a half dozen or more shotguns. So imagine if this is your first exposure to what firearms are all about. If this is the memory that you associate with guns, it's going to take some work, right? And some sensitive persuasion to change that mindset and impress upon someone that, you know what, guns are not bad. Guns themselves don't care. They don't have an opinion. They're just tools, and they can be used one way under one context and another way in a different context. So that's the kind of thing that I think a movie like this helps everybody to take into consideration and keep in mind. Now, here's my other warning about this movie. I think it's important that everyone recognize and keep in mind that that was then, and this is now. There's no need, in my opinion, to continually punish every successive generation for what some of their ancestors did or did not do. But what is important, especially now that the Second Amendment is under such critical scrutiny, is to appreciate the deep-seated roots of some of the commonly held misconceptions about guns and about the police. And while misconceptions about police vis-a-vis race may be wrong, they're certainly not arbitrary, right? They're not completely plucked out of the sky. There is a rationale behind it, even if that rationale is flawed. And I think understanding that premise may help us to have more productive, more civil, more empathetic dialogue with each other on these really sensitive issues. And you know what? I'll say this too. If you are of a minority race, especially Black people, but if you're not white and you're going to see this movie, don't go to the movie looking for reasons to hate white people. James Baldwin himself didn't hate white people, and he says it in the movie. And if you hate white people, guess what? You're a racist. If you really want to appreciate Baldwin's philosophy and see it through a contemporary lens, he's not just talking to white people. I mean, think about what Baldwin's words have to say about or have to do with your own life as a 21st century Black person or non-white person. Think about why Baldwin was not a member of the NAACP and why he did not join the Black Panthers and why his opinions differed from those of Medgar Evers and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And ask yourself how his reflections might apply to you, even if you think he was just talking about white people. You know, one of my favorite lines from the film is from one of his interviews where he says,
"You don't know what's happening on the other side of the world because you don't want to know."
That statement doesn't just apply to one race, all right? So take a good reflective look at yourself as you watch the movie and be open-minded, because it ends on an optimistic note. He also says,
"I can't be a pessimist because I'm alive."
Good advice to live by. And on that note, I'll close it out and just say, go and see I Am Not Your Negro. It's a really good film for people of all races, even if... Hello, Ike. Ike has come to say hello. I guess he heard me talking about John Wick's pit bull earlier, got jealous. So he's sitting right next to me staring at me. So, but go see this movie regardless of your race, even if you think you fully understand what that era was all about. Even if you're part of that generation and you lived through it just like my mother did, go see the movie anyway. And, you know, I'd be curious to know what you think about it. I thought it was excellent. Next up on the movie scene is Logan. Can't wait to see that one. But until then, everybody, stay safe and keep it centered and even.
You can follow Tiffany at frontsightpress.com.
And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony. It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette.
So as I mentioned earlier, I came down with a stomach bug the last day of Mag 40 that left me dehydrated and going at both ends, often simultaneously. While I don't know precisely what it was that I had, my best guess is the norovirus, aka the winter vomiting bug. And it's commonly caused by fecal contamination of food, touching a contaminated surface and then your mouth, or directly from another sick person. Sorry, roommate. Norovirus is a viral buzzsaw that just rips through close collections of people, such as classrooms or people on cruise ships. And based on my close, intimate relationship with norovirus, the biggest problem with it is dehydration. I was desperately thirsty and my mouth was full of cotton, but I couldn't take more than a few swallows without upsetting my stomach and triggering another vomiting session. Worse, diarrhea causes an electrolyte imbalance within the body, which in turn creates more diarrhea. In other words, diarrhea is self-perpetuating. So for those who are curious, you can indeed shit yourself to death. What's more, after a case of norovirus, the gastrointestinal tract may be severely inflamed or not used to digesting food, and it may need to be restarted. So, what's a prepper to do? Obligatory disclaimer: I am not a trained health professional. Do not take this as strict medical advice. Consult your doctor if you have an erection for more than 4 hours. So first, always have an anti-diarrheal medicine, like Imodium AD, in both your bug-out and get-home bags. And after this weekend, I'm keeping several doses in my everyday carry kit. Second, have a way to get electrolytes back into your system. Since you're trying to prevent dehydration at the same time, the best way to do that is through liquids. Now, I'm a big fan of Gatorade, but any sport drink will do, as will Pedialyte for children, and of course, regular old water. You can also buy packages of oral rehydration salts from Amazon. Just mix them with clean water and you're good to go. They're light enough that you can fit them into any bug out or get home bag. But there are some liquids to avoid. Milk, because while you may not normally be lactose intolerant, your digestive tract may not be able to process milk in your weakened state. Alcohol and caffeine, because both of these substances also contribute to dehydration and only make things worse. Excessively sugary drinks like soda and fruit juices, because while sugar is important in electrolyte solutions, too much of it has the opposite effect. Avoid any liquid that has more than 3% sugar in it. And don't use artificial sweeteners either, as those often have a laxative effect. Third, when it comes time to eat, and it may be days before you want to think about food, it's best to start small. There's something called the BRAT diet, bananas, rice, applesauce, toast, which is supposed to be very easy on sensitive guts. Other foods, which are good for recovering digestive tracts, are oatmeal, boiled potatoes, plain crackers, and baked chicken without skin or fat. And you'll notice that a lot of these ingredients are in that universal antidote, chicken soup. Preppers ought to consider adding some packages of oatmeal and chicken broth to their bug-out bags, and perhaps some dehydrated bananas as well. And finally, keep a dark-colored washcloth in your various bags. Don't use it for regular hygiene of the hands or the face. Use it for cleaning down there. When the S hits the F, it's good to have a soft, absorbent, dark so it won't stain cloth to clean that S from your body.
Not only can you subscribe or donate to the podcast, you can also make a contribution to the LGBT Training Ammo Fund. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the LGBT Training Ammo Fund donation button in the right sidebar. I'll use this money to pay for range fees, targets, and yes, ammo for the people I teach. And thanks for your support. Thanks to a tip from former contributor Miguel at Gun Free Zone, Weird discovered Fusion Comedy and their take on the Second Amendment in This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery.
So via Miguel from Gun Free Zone, I found two videos from the Fusion Network. The first is from a series called Democracy Handbook by Bassem Youssef, a popular talk show host in Egypt who fled to America for political reasons. As you might guess, this episode is Youssef's take on the Second Amendment and American gun ownership. I will note that many of the bits in this show were done for laughs. I didn't particularly find any of it remotely funny, but I will give some license to some of the things said if they were obviously done tongue-in-cheek. So let's dive right in.
There is one thing that makes everyone equal in America. Whether you are this guy or this guy, everyone can get a gun.
Ugh. It seems when any anti-gun nut is getting ready to sell you a bill of goods, they always set the stage with this lie. Everybody can get a gun in America! See, they aren't getting into the lengthy and absurd list of things that can get a good person disqualified for life from owning a gun, as that wouldn't do their argument any favors. Also, listing all the measures we've taken to make sure violent and dangerous people don't get guns might make American gun laws look less haphazard. Also, when he talks about equality, under no circumstances does he touch the elephant in the room, which is self-defense. The Second Amendment is the right to bear arms, not the right to bear guns. But both sides focus on the gun because that's the best tool for personal protection. And a gun can be effectively used by a 25-year-old 300-pound professional linebacker or a 98-pound retired grandmother. And not only can a gun give decent odds of self-defense when it's a strong attacker against a weak defender, but also when it's one versus many attackers. The gun's role as the great equalizer against oppression and violence is too dangerous an idea for people not comfortable with guns to talk about.
In the Middle East, only police, soldiers, militias, and terrorists have guns. Guns are hard to come by for regular citizens, which is why we usually just throw rocks at each other. It's not a perfect solution, but it's all we've got.
This is played for laughs, but is he really saying that America would be better if it was more like the Middle East? Police and military is a common argument we hear about with people who should have guns. We have terrorists with guns too now, but luckily only a few, and in a nation this big, that's virtually none. They have terrorists everywhere. And militia? He's not using that the same way we are. He's saying, terrorist, people trying to overthrow the government. Militia, the terrorist who successfully overthrew the government. If guns are so hard to come by, how do the terrorists get them? And if they can get guns, and the common citizen cannot, is that really a good argument for gun control? You aren't selling me, Bassem.
You are loaded with guns. 300 million guns in the hands of civilians. That's almost one gun for every American. Maybe it's because there are so many ways to get a gun here. Online, through private sales, and even at your local Walmart, which is the biggest gun seller in the US. I'm just glad no one told these ladies about the shotguns two aisles over.
I'm not sure if he's being misleading or completely ignorant on the issue. There are only two legal ways to get a gun in America, through an FFL or by private sale between two residents of the same state. That's it. The antis like to make it sound like there are more ways, but there aren't. You could buy guns at a gun show! Except you're either buying a gun from an FFL who has a table there, and he conducts the sale as if it's at a regular shop, or you're buying from a private seller. Same with online. If both buyer and seller are in the same state and both parties are willing to meet face-to-face, it's a private sale. If not, it's done through an FFL with a background check. And you can buy at Walmart! Yep, the individual stores can elect to hold a 01 FFL like any other gun shop. They're the biggest seller of guns only because there are so damn many of them. As of 2016 numbers, there were 5,229 Walmarts in the United States, though not all of them sell guns.
As long as you're of age, you've never done more than 1 year in jail, you're not deemed crazy or drunk at the time of purchase, getting a gun in America is a privilege.
So like the first clip, everyone can get a gun. This is painfully misleading. As long as you're of age is 100% correct. FFLs can't sell guns to anybody under 18 or handguns to anybody under 21. Though your state may have different laws for FFLs or private sellers. So long as you've never done more than 1 year in jail is likely a mistake based on pure ignorance on the issue. Yes, the Gun Control Act states a person is prohibited from owning a firearm if they are under indictment for or have been convicted in any court of law a crime punishable by imprisonment for a term exceeding 1 year. But that just means under indictment or convicted of a felony. You don't even need to serve any time at all to be prohibited. You just need to be convicted of a crime where you legally could have been sentenced to 366 days or more in the pen. Interesting how he states, you're not deemed crazy or drunk at the time of sale. What does that even mean? If you're sentenced to involuntary mental health treatment by a court of law, you're a prohibited person. But there are no laws that state that you can't sell a gun to anybody who's fall down drunk. Now, there are implications to an FFL allowing someone under the influence to fill out some legally binding government paperwork, but I think he's lumping these two things together because he has zero understanding of the law. But hey, you don't need to understand the issue to give your opinions. And of course, we're not mentioning getting a false denial because your name is similar to a prohibited person, or now the infamous delay, which has been proven to be a false issue. And of course, all of this is if you live in a state that doesn't heavily restrict your rights by requiring permits, taxes, waiting periods, or police discretion before you buy a gun.
Americans bought over 1.7 million guns in September 2015 alone. But why?
Answer? Whatever it was a good reason, as violent crime was dropping.
In America, there were over 53,000 incidents of gun violence last year. In fact, 43 shootings were carried out by, are you ready? Toddlers. Your streets, backyards, and living rooms are like the Arab Spring every day. I might be safer back in Egypt.
Wow, a little bit of honesty here. You don't hear the 50,000 number very often. Most of the time, anti-gun nuts will quote 36,000 for the number of people killed with guns, or 100,000 for the number of people injured by guns. But both of these numbers include suicide and incidents where a gun was present but not actually used. 50,000 is indeed just what we'd consider gun violence. But 50,000 events in a nation with a population of 319 million people means that this is affecting 15 thousandths of 1% of the population. That's 0.015%. I can't even verify the toddler number. But suffice to say, 50,000 events is a very, very low number. 43 out of 319 million is a number so close to zero that it can be approximated as such. Hey, but he thinks he might be safer back in Egypt. Except that Bassem Youssef was jailed in Egypt for his political commentary, and because of this, he fled to the United States. Sorry, Bassem, if you went back to Egypt, but kept doing what you've been doing here all these years, the government there will likely execute you. That won't happen here, in part because of our First Amendment, but also in part that the Second Amendment safeguards against the government ignoring the Constitution you make so light of. Next is a brief segment by Stephen Michael going on the stupid ammosexual trope. He's concerned about states that won't let him love his gun the way he wants to.
But don't worry, there are still places that don't mind a bit of man-on-gun love. Here are some of the most gun-friendly places in the country.
Oh, God. Okay, I'm listening.
Vermont, maple syrup, Ben and Jerry's, and Miners Pack and Heat. This little state makes big allowances for their youth, allowing teens at the mature age of 16 to buy and conceal carry handguns without parental permission.
And Vermont has one of the lowest violent crime rates in the country. Anti-gunners always say, if guns made us safer, why aren't we the safest nation in the world? Well, if the whole country was like gun-crazy Vermont, it would be.
There are 30 states that have no minimum age to own a long gun, so you can own a rifle while you're still pooping in your pants. Smells like freedom.
Okay, that fart joke was the only time I laughed in both of these videos. Also, not only do these states not have a problem with minors with long guns, no state has a problem with long guns of any kind. If you remember back in episode 80, we talked about death rates from long guns. More people are killed with hammers and clubs than rifles, and more people are killed with hands or feet than long guns of any kind. Is he implying we need minimum age requirements for hands and feet?
In Florida, it's not only acceptable to wear a see-through tank top to work, you can even bring your guns to the office. In fact, Florida is just one of 17 states where it's illegal for companies to prevent their employees from keeping their guns in their cars at work, even on company property.
Even on company property? But if the gun is locked in your car, whose property is it on? Never mind the irony that most companies disarm their employees by policy and under threat of termination and financial hardship, but supply no additional security. Because the disgruntled employee looking for revenge or the violent criminal looking for the money in the till cares a whit that there's a no guns allowed sign there.
In Iowa, visually impaired people can legally buy guns even if they're too blind to drive.
This is just blatantly ignorant. He's suggesting that if you're legally blind and can't drive a car, you're unable to see and only walk around with the help of a white cane and a trained dog. Also, here's some more blatant ignorance. With the exception of Massachusetts, where you need to take a live fire course to buy a gun, there is no law that says somebody can't buy or own a gun if they are legally blind. The Iowa law he's talking about is that the state will not deny permits to those who are legally blind. I have two legally blind relatives, and both of them can see. And unless you were really perceptive, you might be surprised to learn they're blind. No, they aren't going to be ringing the gong at 300 yards with iron sights, but they could all pass the live fire portion to get their Massachusetts permit. There are many manifestations of legal blindness. Some would indeed preclude the ability to safely shoot, but others would not.
Liberty University took it one step further to ensure the safety of their students by allowing students to keep guns and a gun safe in their dorms. They did, however, ban toasters. Guns? Okay. Electric radiators that brown slice bread? Not okay.
Except there's an average of 3,870 fires on campus housing every year. 83% of those were caused by cooking equipment. Compare that with zero incidents of students lawfully carrying on campus. That rule makes perfect sense. Again, anti-gunners never argue in good faith.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com.
Plug of the week, the Nex Belt. About a month ago, I told you all that I got a belt in the mail from the Nex Belt company. That's N-E-X-B-E-L-T at nexbelt.com. And I was wearing it for the last month, and I really like this belt. Now, I have gone back to my previous belt, which is a Beltman, but that's because it's an inch and three quarter. It's been called the tactical girdle. I like that belt. It's more comfortable to me because I'm used to wearing this big old wide belt. But if you're looking for that first belt, that first gun belt, this isn't a bad choice here. Now, I've shown this belt to Erin over the Skype so she can take a look at it. Now, how tactical does this belt look?
Not at all. It just looks like a regular office casual belt.
Exactly. So if you're looking for a belt that you can wear with dress pants, this is a good belt. It's about $60. One of the interesting things about this belt is that instead of holes, it uses this interesting ratchet arrangement. You can kind of hear it, I guess. And it latches up when you pull tight. So you can adjust it in quarter inch increments as opposed to, what, 3/4 or 1 inch or slightly more for belt holes. That's, I found, was really nice that I could adjust exactly where I wanted it. And it comes off by, there's a little tab at the bottom of the belt. You pull on it and boom, the belt loosens up. I wore it every day. I wore it to work. I wore it carrying a gun. I wore it without a gun. I took it to an IDPA match and shot the IDPA match with it. Never had an issue with it at all. The only reason I'm not still wearing this belt is because I just prefer the inch and three quarter belt. I am keeping the belt because I do need a dress belt. I do need a belt so that I can carry when I'm wearing dress pants. And dress pants, they just don't have room for an inch and three quarter belt for some reason.
So what I'm hearing is that if Nex Belt were to make a version in inch and three quarter, you would be all over that.
Oh, I think I would be. It's a nice belt. So if you're looking for a belt, give it a look. It's nexbelt.com. That's N-E-X-B-E-L-T.com. Well, that's our show for the week. Remember that the Gunblog Variety Cast is a member of the Self Defense Radio Network.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode133.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you.
From Golden Saber to range rounds, get a full lineup of quality Remington ammo that shoots fast. That, goddammit. Well, I imagine it would shoot fast, they're bullets. that is for me. As Weird promised last week, it's still movie week. This week, Tiffany reviews I Am Not You. Yeah, Sean, I can't say that out loud.
You can't say what? Negro?
Fade out.
You can't say Negro? That's the title of the f***ing movie. It's not like you're calling somebody something offensive.
Yeah. So, how about we just fade off when you say that word, and then we're good.
As Weird promised last week, it's still movie week. This week, Tiffany reviews, I Am Not Your Negro.
Norovirus is a viral buzzsaw that rips through close collections of people like... Did I say collections or I said classrooms? Norovirus is a viral buzzsaw that just rips through close collections of people, such as classrooms.
And one of the interesting things about it, aside from it not looking tactical at all, is that it has a ratchet for the changing... It has a ratchet instead of holes in it for the size... Damn it, f***ing... It has a, one of the interesting things about this belt is that instead of holes, it uses this interesting ratchet arrangement. You can kind of hear it, I guess. God damn it. Banging shit. You can kind of hear it. And it latches up when you pull tight.
This is a URS production.